ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions. I am the one, the only, the ever snarky Sasha Kaplan, and I'm joined by the tropical, the delightful, and the magical Caitlin Moore.
I'm in Hawaii, folks. It's great.
Hopefully Hawaii is recovering well from all of its unfortunate natural disaster troubles, and they're doing okay.
From what I've gathered here, things are improving, but the locals are asking to be as kind and respectful as possible, which I am doing.
Isn't asking much, and yet. But we know you're a wonderful person, and I'm sure that you will not cause any trouble for the locals.
No. But, at least not on purpose. But
hopefully not.
You know, it's hard to ask for people to be respectful, just as it's hard to ask for a good Spider-Man movie, apparently.
Holy Kirby. Before we get to your questions, I remember I started watching this movie, and my first text to you was, did we just watch the same movie three times?
Well, that's actually the first question.
All right, then take us away as we've suffered through Spider-Man 3 so our audience doesn't have to.
Okay, guys, so if you've seen one of these Spider-Man movies, you've essentially seen them all. So the first question is did we just watch the same movie all over again?
It's sort of like, you know how fan fiction will take a movie and rewrite it by changing certain details, by making the couple get together earlier, making their ship canon, whatever it is, right? It's sort of like everybody was asked to write a sequel to the first Spider-Man movie through basically rewriting a few small elements to make it like their own thing so that they're not completely copying, right? They're just doing it slightly differently. So there's like just enough difference. So it's not a cut and copy and paste like version, like, you know, in like some of those Harry Potter fan fiction where they just like have the characters reacting to the book itself. This mm-hmm. is sort of just like fan fiction.
I feel like that this is like we're watching Spider-Man 2 with more villains in it, and that's essentially like the gimmick. And like to get into it, like the plot is almost beat for beat the same. In some instances, like you still have the dumb love triangle for some reason that's still going on. You got essentially the villains of the week in here. And it's all about Peter, who's still being bullied in college somehow. Like,
yeah, I have a note about that. He's like teacher's pet and brilliant. This is college. This isn't high school. You're supposed to be with like people who are in your major who like, you know, are into the same things you are. Why would he be bullied? This makes no sense.
Yeah. No, like the only like major difference is that his relationship to Mary Jane has progressed. So he's getting ready to propose to her. And that's a main thoroughfare of this movie. Also, just the miscommunication is still very much throughout this movie.
And Peter's inability to talk to girls.
Yes. All of that. And it's like, there are some key differences. We don't get a building on fire scene in this movie for once, unlike the other previous two,
yeah.
We don't get like a couple of other things, but it's like the main core elements are all still there. And it feels like, again, they just took everything from the first Spider-Man movie and just added a bunch of stuff as if that's going to change the core components. And the stuff that they added, most of it's not fantastic.
No. I feel like it's like they don't know what story they want to tell in this movie, right? Because you have Flint's journey he's the only character that really, like, him and Peter actually go through a journey in this movie. But I guess everybody has their own journey, just not very cohesive, right? Except Mary Jane,
yeah,
because she doesn't really get any kind of resolution.
Mary Jane still has zero character in this movie, which is fine, as fine as it can be. She has more character than she did in the second one, I would argue, but she's still not like Gwen Stacy's more interesting.
I hot take could not with Gwen Stacy here.
Well, it's yeah, I hear you. But it's like
Granted, maybe it's because I'm basing it off other versions of Gwen Stacy I've seen since, from like the Spectacular Spider-Man movies, the Amazing Spider-Man movies, but oh my God, she's like cutesy is her personality. I also don't understand if Peter's like a physics major, why she's in his class if she's clearly not a physics major, and they make a point of like she's like it's like have this been to college? Do they understand that college does not work the way high school does, where you take all of the same classes regardless of like what your interests are?
No, but like we're touching on a lot of different things, and let's get to some of the other questions. But yes, this is basically the same movie all over again. The second question I have is, would this movie be a lot better if it didn't have Venom in it?
Actually, yeah. Like, first of all, Eddie Brock is like I remember like the original like 90s Eddie Brock from like the Spider-Man the animated series. And this Brock is honestly kind like the Eddie Brock I remember was a little annoying and a little sleazy, but he was good at his job. And he I think he had a wife in the animated version. But here he's a creeper who thinks he and Gwen are dating, even though they basically went on one date. Like there's a scene where he shows up to take pictures when Gwen's in danger or whatever. He's like, "Oh, hey, Captain Stacy, I'm dating your daughter." And then they meet at the like heater key to the city, and she's like, "What are you talking about? We only had coffee." Like, bro, we're not in a relationship. And I'm just like, wait a minute, what?
And then he
So
was going to propose to her in the movie.
was he really gonna propose?
Yes, that was
I
the
thought Peter
thing.
was gonna
Remember,
propose.
he wanted the full-time photography job because he was planning on marrying her.
They had one date.
Yeah, he's a weirdo in this movie. That's not just like a problem of Eddie Brock. Like he's like a good, like weird side villain in this movie, if that was all he did. No, it's the fact that Venom first infects Peter Parker and we get Black Suit Spider-Man. I, for the audience here, guess when that happens in the movie? Is it the first 20 minutes? Is it the
No, it's
first
like 40 minutes
45?
in or something.
Is it the in the like at the hour mark when it actually
Yeah.
happens? Yeah, so you get through half of this movie before you even touch Black Suit Spider-Man. Now, Venom shows up way earlier when him and Mary Jane are on a date watching a meteor shower and it crashes and you see the goo. But then it attaches to Peter's like motorbike cycle thing. But you don't actually get Black Suit Spider-Man until way later in this movie. And at that point, like there's so much else going on. Like the way more interesting stuff is what's happening with Harry and the amnesia plot, because this movie has an amnesia plot.
Because
And
of how central Harry has been to the previous two movies, it sort of made sense to continue his journey. And then, honestly, I wonder if the whole thing would have been more interesting is if we still go through this journey of like, Peter being the Spider-Man or whatever. You get the whole bit of like rescuing Gwen Stacy from shenanigans. You can put in like a Z-list villain, like the Shocker or something, just to keep Peter doing stuff while you develop Marco, right? And then have Harry go through this journey again to the point, and then Peter's dealing with black suit stuff, so you're paralleling Peter's journey a little bit with Harry's journey, and then you have this epic fight between Harry and Peter that ultimately ends with Harry still dying, but I feel like it would have been more emotional. Or, I don't know, the movie is like, you're right. Venom really isn't necessary because there's so much going on. If you wanted to do the Black Suit saga, you can still do it. What they could have done is still introduce Eddie Brock, right? But have Peter actually lose the job to Eddie, and then have the good chunk of the movie is Peter trying to figure out how Eddie got the shot. And then figuring out that it was photoshopped or whatever, it was edited by him, right? So then Spider-Man's dealing with spider stuff. Then at the end, his anger at Eddie gets him fired. he ditches the suit, goes into the final battle with whoever the bad guy is. And then at the end, you see the Venom suit, or the bits of the symbiote actually attached to Eddie, who's fueled by the anger of being beaten by Peter Parker. But Eddie Brock is a creeper here. Like, he's in church, right? And he's like, dear God. And he's looking at, like, Jesus here at the Catholic church here. And he's like, let's kill Peter Parker. And I'm like, bro, do you understand how religion works? Jesus was the whole love thy neighbor thing. Like, he's not going to come out here and smite your arch enemy, Peter Parker, just because you're cranky, because your own actions led to your own undoing, right? Because all Peter does, even though it's kind of half-assed, is reveal that Eddie photoshopped a photo that Peter took to make Spider-Man look like the bad guy. Eddie cheated. Eddie faced consequences. Like, and then, of course, like, yeah, we also get the scene of basically Peter taking out Gwen Stacy, his girlfriend, which then angers Eddie Brock even more, so he has a reason to hate Peter Parker. But it's, like, it's so... Like, the two actions aren't really connected. They could have connected. It's just, why Eddie Brock is so weird here.
See, in my perfect version of this movie, we wouldn't have done black suit Spider-Man at all. Like, Venom just would not have been in this movie. The plot would have revolved around Harry and Sandman. And, like, you could still do, like, Peter angry at the world, Peter acting out of character, because he's trying to hunt down the guy he thinks killed his Uncle Ben. And how much more impactful would that have been if it was Peter influenced by his own anger and rage and tying back into that with great power comes great responsibility, rather than have it be an outside force influencing his own decisions and actions so that he's not really at fault?
Same time, we sort of already gotten so much of the whole great power, great responsibility stuff in the first two movies that it's almost like, I think it still would have given us the whole, are we watching the same movie again? But I think what could have maybe tipped the scales a little bit, maybe if at the end of this, Flint actually surrenders himself, right? Goes whatever he does. And then the final shot of the movie is actually Spider-Man showing up to see his daughter. Or, you know, working with something else. Like, maybe he talks to J. Jonah Jameson and is like, hey, Jonah, you want to get some really good publicity after you screwed up this whole thing with the spider picture? Like, how about helping a little girl beat her illness or something like that? Right?
Or something. Yeah. And, like, the final showdown should have been Peter and Harry. Like, that's just how that the movie should have ended. Mary Jane should not have been kidnapped again. We've done that like so many times at this point. It did not need to happen.
So, speaking of half-assing this movie, the screams that Mary Jane has apparently in this movie, because she has been kidnapped for a third time here, folks, are all of her screams are actually recycled from the previous two Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, folks, we can't even get original screaming. But, like, that's kind of like, this movie is so busy and it's so cramped. There's just too much going on in order to do any of the thorough lines justice. Like, individual scenes are fabulous. Flint with his daughter is amazing. Like, his entire story is fantastic. It's not given enough screen time. Harry Peter and Harry in the hospital scene is fabulous. His amnesia plot's not given enough screen time because we're too busy trying to deal with Peter being black suit Spider-Man or whatever is going on. And then the stupid nonsense with the love triangle. Like, if they cut all of the love triangle nonsense,
they really should have just left it after the... You know what? Here's where you can get Gwen Stacy. Imagine, right, if part of Harry's amnesia is he forgets he has a girlfriend, the charming Gwen Stacy.
Oh, yeah. Or something along those
possibilities
lines.
Possibilities are endless.
Gwen Stacy. Instead, we did, like, this weird nonsense. And that leads into the third question. What's going on in the jazz club, which is everyone's least favorite part of this movie?
Okay, so this is as cringy as that scene was, and it is really, really bad. I can't decide if the scene previously is better or worse, which is emo Peter, or like totally not emo Peter Parker, walking around the street like a freaking creeper and just like staring at women. And like all of the women around him are bizarre, are, have this like very confused and offended look on their face, rightfully so, or they're just disgusted.
So the kind of like the lead up to this particular scene is that Mary Jane breaks up with Peter because Harry forces her to, because he regains his memories like 5 seconds after he loses them. Like, I don't know why we did an amnesia plot at all, frankly, if we weren't going to like actually see it through. But yeah, so he forces Mary Jane to break up with Peter for reasons. And she's, because Mary Jane and Peter just don't talk to each other, she doesn't tell him that's what's happening. So she just breaks up with him, and then Peter like loses his damn mind. And that's how we end up in like this weird jazz club where he takes Gwen Stacy, knowing full well that's where Mary Jane works, because she lost her job on Broadway, because honestly she can't sing Broadway.
So we actually talked about this. It's not really much of a hot take. So as someone who took voice lessons, here's the thing. There's a very, and I'm not a Broadway singer at all, but I did take voice lessons for 4 years in college. And what you have to understand is that like, there's a difference between being able to sing and carry a tune and singing for Broadway, right? In the same way that like, just because you can carry a tune, or just because you start in a school play does not make you a great actor. Just because you made some good home movies does not make you a good cinematographer, right? There, you have to train your body, your muscles, your brain to do that. And so Broadway singers are very skilled. They are incredible performers, and they take years and years of music lessons and singing lessons in order to be that good. Mary Jane, and I don't know if Kirsten Dunst is singing herself. I kind of assume it is because the voice is very similar. But Kirsten Dunst doesn't sing like a Broadway singer, because obviously she's not. She sings like someone who is just really good at doing karaoke or good at carrying a tune, but doesn't have any formal training. And so, yeah, she gets ceremony. The part that annoys me about this, because like it could have been, A, because it kind of feels like they put Mary Jane backwards instead of forwards. Like she didn't, we really didn't need the side plot of her losing this Broadway gig. But what bothers me is that she at no point actually tells Peter what happens, yet expects him to just know what happens.
I kind of get why, and that gets into like my next question, but like to get back to this weird jazz club thing.
Ah, yes. Sorry.
We could talk about Mary Jane like for the next 2 hours, and it'd be easy, because basically she has no character, and then they all did all these weird things to try to give her one, and none of it worked. So yeah, and then Peter basically acts like a maniac in this jazz club, because apparently he learned piano at some point.
Yeah, when did Peter learn piano? I have a note about that.
And then he basically is like starts dancing on tables and singing and just showing up Mary Jane in order to make her jealous. And Gwen Stacy, kudos to her, immediately catches on. It's like, wow, you're a creep. I'm leaving now. Bye. And I'm like, okay, what was the point of any of this? This was just like one giant filler scene in the middle of this movie that did not need to happen.
Yeah. And it also ends with Peter like getting into a fight and then actually hitting Mary Jane.
Yeah.
Which, big no-no, but it was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back for him to realize, like, oh, this is bad. Also, there's, like, before that, he meets with Dr. Connors, and Dr. Connors is like, hey, BT Dubs, the thing's a corrupting force, like, maybe you shouldn't do that. But he's not paying attention because he's busy flirting with the girl next door and ordering her around because,
So basically, the suit makes you a misogynist.
Well, the suit amplifies Yeah, actually, no, that's that tracks, because Connor says that the Soon like amplifies anger, but not all of Peter's actions are guided by anger. They're guided by misogyny, essentially.
What would have made infinitely more sense if the suit made him a complete maniac trying to hunt down Flint Marko. If you were going to have Black Suit Spider-Man, if and it amplifies anger.
Well, he knows. Rather, we did that. Then they did. They just like didn't know what to do with it afterwards. Like, okay, he's taken down Sandman seemingly, but we still have an hour and a half of this movie left, or now, an and like I don't know, 45 minutes of this movie left. What else are we gonna do with the blood with Peter being in the symbiote?
Yeah, well, yeah, they did that way too early in this movie, frankly, and they actually like in theory the Black Suit Spider-Man turned him into a murderer. Because he genuinely thinks he killed Flint. And then yeah. He goes to his aunt and he's like, yeah, by the way, Spider-Man murdered our Uncle Ben's killer. And she's like, what? Spider-Man wouldn't do that. And I'm like, oh my God.
Well, as it turns out, Spider-Man didn't do that.
Yeah, it turns out Spider-Man didn't do that. But let's get back to kind of a point you brought up earlier. Does Mary Jane actually have a character now that we've watched all three of these movies?
She wants to be an actress. She has daddy issues.
Yeah. Okay.
Her dad's a jerk. That's the problem is that that's like all backstory and plot. It's not anything actually about Mary Jane's personality. Give me one personality trait that Mary Jane has.
She's bad at communicating.
Yeah. Okay. That's valid. Right. What about her personality?
She doesn't have one. Everyone's in love with her, but she really is like kind of a stick in the mud. Like, she never tells Peter what's going on, but frankly, he kind of doesn't let her either. Like, these two just don't let each, like, they're just in completely different worlds. And you can kind of notice that in like the dinner scene where Peter invites her to this very fancy French restaurant, and we also get the worst humor in the movie with the maitre d'. But then it's like there's like this entire thing where they're fighting, and the guy keeps trying to bring out the engagement ring and the champagne glass, and like Peter keeps telling them to go away because him and Mary Jane just aren't listening to each other.
You forgot something very important before we get back to Mary Jane.
What?
This is Bruce Campbell's third cameo in this movie, and the third time he plays an entirely different character. It's very important.
Oh yeah, that's the important part of this scene. And it's just like, Mary Jane apparently does not handle rejection well, which is the main thoroughfare of this movie. And she really is bad at making omelets with Harry.
That scene was so weird.
Yeah.
What's also weird about that omelet scene, though, is the fact that he asks Bertram to go get some food.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, when he's, like, actually cooking, did you see, like, the measly amount of, like, red peppers that he just, like, puts on the pan? I'm like, that's not enough for two people. What are you doing? That's, like, barely enough for one omelet.
First, I'm glad you know what the butler's name is, because I had no damn idea.
I think it was Bertrand or something like that. We can check the casting. I don't know why I remember that. But, well, actually, maybe because his name was mentioned.
Anyway, Harry and Mary Jane don't know how to make omelets. And I don't know why Mary Jane is even back there. Because she already tried dating Harry in the first movie. So maybe she's not the only one. Harry's not the only one with amnesia. Maybe it's both of them. Because that didn't end well either. And so at the end of that scene, they end up kissing. And Mary Jane realizes, oh, this is a horrible mistake. I'm still dating Peter. Meanwhile, though, Peter's also kissing Gwen Stacy as Spider-Man, and...
Well, that happens after. It's almost like she went the kiss... So, I actually have a note about that, where she kisses Harry. I was like, okay, MJ, you kissed Harry. Are you guys even now? Because she gets so mad, and rightfully so, about Spider-Man kissing Gwen Stacy at the Key to the City thing while he's being egged on by literally everybody in New York, except that one little kid who's like... And I'm like, you kid are the smart one here. But
so that actually is a personality trait of Mary Jane. She's very jealous and possessive, which Makes sense. They are dating.
But she also, like, just doesn't actually know how to be in a relationship, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I don't think
she...
any of these characters do, frankly.
That's fair. Peter's problem is he's never actually been in one. And Mary Jane is, like, she wants romance and coddling and support, but also, like, expects her partner to read her mind constantly. While also, like, she's in love with Peter, and she's happy that he's Spider-Man, and she doesn't, like... I think there's only really one scene where she sort of resented the fact that he's Spider-Man, but never actually said it, which I thought was actually very nice and subtle, but that's, like, one moment in an otherwise subpar characterization across three films now.
Yeah.
And, oh, like, I apologize. Again, for some reason, John Paxton, the guy who played... the butler is only credited as Houseman, even though I'm pretty sure his name was like Bertrand or something.
All right. Whatever his name is, but Mary Jane was probably the strongest in the first movie, and she's just gradually gone into damsel in distress mode by the end of this.
Well, because in the first movie, she had a clear trajectory and a purpose, right? She was the girl of Peter. She was the girl Peter's loved his entire life, right? She is the girl next door. They have this, like, will they, won't they. Then she dates Harry, and it's kind of awkward, but Peter's always there for her. And they have this, like, building up of chemistry. And then the first Spider-Man, I think, is still honestly the best of the trilogy in retrospect, especially given our conversation last time. But, like, oh my goodness, could they have given her just, like, a little bit more to work with? Because Kristen Dunst is a good actress. She's mm-hmm. done so many other films, and she's phenomenal. But here, it was like, you can tell she's... I think there's a few scenes where you can tell she's trying to do more with this character, but it's like something won't let her.
And Mary Jane isn't the only character who I think suffers in this movie. And that gets on to the next question. Did we need Harry's amnesia plot?
So it's interesting because we've kind of gone back and forth in our conversations about that, because the plot itself would have been better if it was part of the whole, if it was the central plot. But I think you did need the amnesia. Well, okay. With the way that the movie is structured, you sort of do need the amnesia plot in order to make Harry likable again, so that MJ is like, gets her revenge on Peter for kissing Gwen, so she kisses Harry. But at the same time, there's so much going on in this movie that, like, what was it? I actually have this weird note about Harry at the beginning of this movie, because after he gets amnesia, it's sort of like he's high the entire time.
A little bit.
Which, like, was James Franco high when he was in this movie?
I wouldn't blame him, frankly.
Yeah, it's valid.
I mean, it would have also been
Oh no, I'm sorry. Hold on. Before I interrupt you, I found my note. It says, is Harry supposed to look like he's a vampire who smoked a ton of weed?
That is kind of his vibe in this movie. I also, like, was playing around with the idea, like, would have been interesting if we just didn't have Eddie Brock the creepo in this movie and we gave Venom to Harry.
Oh, that would have been a really interesting twist. But ultimately, as you said, we don't need we don't actually need Venom in this movie.
We don't. He's good also as the Green Goblin lookalike, and then that could just be the last battle. Like, that's how Peter realizes that Harry actually regained his memories, and we could have had this really good movie where Harry was insidiously, like, messing with Peter's life slowly and trying to take everything away. Meanwhile, Peter didn't know he was regained his memories.
But then that also kind of, like, mirrors everything from the first movie. I think the problem is that they've kind of written themselves in a corner with Harry.
Yeah.
Because the first movie was focused on just establishing Harry and the relationships and all that. The second movie is, like, Harry getting crankier and crankier about Spider-Man killing Dad. And by the end of the movie, finding out that Peter is Spider-Man. And then him finding all of the goblin gear. But so then in the third movie, there's nowhere for it to go that would have that wouldn't have been a repetition of what Norman did in the first movie.
See, an interesting idea I had is, like, what happens if, like, for whatever reason, Harry was the one who gave, like, the photoshopped photo of Spider-Man to Eddie Brock. Not Eddie Brock. Yeah, Eddie Brock. And, like, then he brings that photo in, and then it ends up being, if we kept Eddie Brock and we kept the Venom thing, then it ended up being a Venom Green Goblin fight. And then Peter gets involved in that way.
Because then that does give him a reason to hate both Harry and Peter, so that, I don't know, there's just, like, what this movie really should have done was maybe set the elements for Sandman while also repairing. So, like, imagine if because we do get instead of the amnesia plot, imagine if we do get this whole thing of the beginning of the movie still the same. Peter's happy with MJ, he's going to propose. Then you have all of this stuff with Harry. And at the end of this, Harry almost dies because of his own actions and Peter saves him. And so then they have a conversation and then Harry passes out. And maybe when he wakes up, he's a little bit saner and he explains what's going on in the Globulus Green. And Peter is trying to help him while also then. So now Peter has the burden of his own job in school, plus Mary Jane, who he's going to propose to, plus trying to help Harry, plus trying to be Spider-Man. So he's essentially trying to save everyone.
Mm-hmm. And then we can still keep kind of the Sandman stuff. And it's like at the same time, then all the stress and anger just drives him to make really crazy decisions. There's like elements of a really good movie in here. It's just there's too many elements. And I think my ultimate conclusion watching this is that they need to cut one of the villains. It's just a matter of what kind of movie you wanted as to who to cut. My thing would have been Venom, because frankly, they also do not explain the origin of Venom at all in this movie. We see he comes from space.
That's all you need
but
to know.
It's like, and then you have, like, this weird Dr. Connors thing, which, by the way, is a retcon of the first movie where Dr. Connors fired Peter from a job. And now he's a college professor.
Well, it was a university job, I think, in the first movie. I think so. But
they never said, I didn't think.
Interestingly enough, apparently in the it says they actually planned to make Kirk Connors the villain by turning into Venom, which they ultimately ended up doing in Amazing Spider-Man. But
that would have actually been interesting.
That would have been actually really interesting because this is a character that we'd met previously. So then you could have had him, because Peter's rebuilding his life, right? He's working with Dr. Connors again. They're friends. They're collaborating. But then they also made him a physicist in this movie for some reason.
To be fair, he kind of is a physicist, because if when you watch Amazing Spider-Man, he's like also a scientist in that one.
Well, because he was doing DNA stuff or something.
We'll get into Amazing Spider-Man next episode. But for this one, like, Dr. Connors really is like this weird side B character. And frankly, he also does not need to be here. He's only here to explain the Venom symbiote. And if you don't have the Venom symbiote, you don't need Connors.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. This is a very sad note. Apparently, Topher Grace actually left the 70s show to star in this movie.
Ooh.
Oof. Oof.
Sorry for him.
I don't understand what happened here.
And I guess that kind of leads to one of the two last of my questions. Is this movie as bad as everyone says it is?
Yes.
Really? Why?
Look,
it
doesn't have its moments, but as a whole, I could not sit through this whole movie. I had to do it in parts. And it dragged in a lot of parts and it didn't drag in others. And there's, like, simultaneously not enough action, but also too much action. And it's a very jumbled film that even the parts that I did think were interesting don't really develop well enough for me to be able to say, like, this movie's not as bad, because I cannot rewatch this movie again.
See, if push came to shove, I think I could. I think there's enough like little elements in here that kept me on. Like, I love the Sandman stuff whenever we actually get the 5 seconds that he's on screen. I liked Harry, Mary Jane, and Peter in the hospital. I thought that was good. I thought, like, of course, J. Jonah Jameson's always amazing in these movies. So any scene he was in, the one big one was good. Like, I felt like there was enough here that wasn't completely stupid that it had some merit. To me, it's not a Green Lantern. It's not like the first Daredevil movie. It's not even Thor: Love and Thunder bad, but it's like I
Or
can
Dark World
rewatch it.
bad.
Or th yeah.
This is
It's like Iron Man 3 bad.
See, I think it's worse than Iron Man 3. Iron Man 3 at least had a cohesive story, even though even if not all of it made sense. And it had a character arc for Tony that sort of made sense. But here, I don't know. Like, there were parts of it that I found funny. Like J. Jonah Jameson getting conned out of his camera and his film by like a little girl who was, I think, actually played by Sam Raimi's daughter.
Yeah, that
But
was fantastic.
that was great. They tried to make Peter quippy in this movie.
And failed.
They failed. Some of the action was very well done, right? Like, you had the armor car fight that was very well done. The way that they designed Sandman was really good. Right. So it has a lot of things going for it, but it had potential that was wasted. And I don't quite understand why. Also, Captain Stacy like disappears completely from this movie.
Well, he's not important at all.
So then what was the point of introducing him in the first place? He's like a glorified cameo.
Actually, that brings up another question. Did Gwen Stacy need to be in this movie at all?
Nope.
No, she did not. She's another character that absolutely could have been completely pulled out of this movie. I have no idea why they included her other than to feed into the let's make Mary Jane jealous plot.
Oh, hold on. I have a better version of this for you since we're rewriting this movie. Forget Gwen Stacy. What if Peter actually meets the Black Cat as Spider-Man? And the plot of this movie is actually Peter meeting this, or Spider-Man meeting this cat burglar, whatever superhero, whatever version you want to go with. And so now it's not a Mary Jane oriented love triangle, even though I hate love triangles. It's a Peter Parker Spider-Man oriented love triangle where there's some chemistry there, but Peter loves Mary Jane. And so the question is then, like, for Peter is, well, this is a person I don't have to worry about losing because she's a superhero and she has some powers, sort of, depending on which version of the Black Cat you want to go with. So like, look, there's like, you and I have read enough Spider-Man comics over the years to be able to come up with some really real doozies for how this movie could have been fun.
If you included Black Cat in this movie as it is now, it would have been absolutely miserable. Like, this would be a 4 hour long movie. It would like have to be. You would have to definitely cut elements
Yeah.
out of it in order to make even that work. Frankly, I don't think they were ready for a Venom plot line yet. And frankly, if you were going to do a Venom plot line, I think Carnage is actually more interesting.
I don't think I've actually seen that. I've never got into the whole like Venom the good guy stuff. Like, that's just it doesn't interest me. Granted, I was never hugely obsessed with Venom the way some Spider-Man fans are. So to me, it was like the first movie was like it was like the original, it was like on the same level as the original Spider-Man movies. Like, it was okay. But I was like, I didn't
So,
care enough for a sequel.
like, the other interesting thing they could have done is they could have given, like, in order to really tie these movies together as a trilogy, given Venom to Flash Thompson.
Yeah, but but Flash Thompson doesn't exist in these movies except randomly when he showed up to Harry's funeral.
Oh yeah, Harry dies. Like, the only villain that's actually managed to live in any of these Spider-Man movies was Sandman.
Yep.
Everyone else is dead. So
I'm also like really bummed we never got the C-list D-list villains. They're not even C-list. They're like D-list. Because like one of the things that was really fun, and again, like I understand there's some practical, there's like special effects issues and stuff like that. And this movie was very expensive to make, but like we don't actually see Peter take out any low-level bad guys. There's like, yeah, sure, there's like a bank robber here and there, or like, you know, petty criminals, but there's never like an in-between the petty criminal and the like Green Goblin, Doc Ock level bad guys, right? Like, yeah. Shocker.
Yeah, he's either fighting bank robbers or people trying to destroy the city. There's no in between.
Like, give me a Shocker. Give me a dude that just like really has some gauntlets and just wants to blow stuff up and take some money, which I guess Sandman is supposed to be sort of that like mid-level villain, but they made him into a big bad.
Just wait until we get to Amazing Spider-Man 2 and we have to deal with the Rhino on top of everything else going on in that movie.
Oh, I knew you were going to bring that up. I'm so not ready for, let's shove a Sinister Six side plot, sidestep into this.
Let's wait till that movie to talk about the Sinister Six. But back to this one, now that we've seen all three of these movies, and in reality, we saw all three of these movies when we watched the first Spider-Man movie. What are your thoughts on the overall trilogy?
Oy. It's a trilogy that I don't think was intended to be a trilogy. It just worked out that the first Spider-Man movie was actually decent and you could make sequels, even though every time I still think about the original Spider-Man movie, I still think about like Mary Jane swinging on what is clearly a mannequin dressed up in a spider costume. And that will forever not be funny. But for me, it's not a cohesive trilogy. It doesn't do a good enough job of sort of giving us an arc across three movies. It sort of just tries to rehash what they think worked in the original without really adding the meat to the soup, right? So it's sort of like, okay, so the soup has some meat. We're just gonna add a little bit more water in here and maybe toss in some more vegetables. And that's gonna make the soup even better. Like, nope, doesn't work. What are we gonna do in the sequel? We're gonna do the same thing again instead of adding like the meat and the potatoes that goes into the soup. I don't know why I used a soup analogy. I don't know anything about soups.
They're watering down what could have been something amazing. Now, for me, the first time I saw this movie was on an airplane, and it was back in the day when everyone shared the one TV screen, so we were all forced to watch Spider-Man 3.
Poor people on that poor airplane.
Yeah, we were all suffering that day, even more so being stuck on an airplane from Europe to the United States. And I'm like, this movie's awful. Watching it on a tiny screen is even worse than watching it. At least like now I got a chance to actually see the damn movie. But to that end, looking at it from like an overall trilogy perspective, they had no idea what they were doing. There's like no thoroughfare. It feels like they're just rehashing the same plot points over and over and over again. Because if it worked the first time, it's going to work the second and third time without like taking any nuance or any of that. Now, there's a lot, and I do mean a lot, you can do with Spider-Man. And as we see, we get like three very different versions of him. And by the time we end up talking about like Tom Holland Spider-Man, we'll probably go through like who is the best Spider-Man, who's the best Peter Parker. But overall, from this perspective, the trilogy, I think the first two movies, definitely I could look back and rewatch. The third one, if you put a gun to my head, maybe. But it just felt like by the time like I hit the middle of the second movie, I was kind of bored. And by the time I finished this third movie, it's like, what were they doing with this trilogy? Like, I needed something more interesting, because at the end of the day, I think this is a Peter Parker trilogy. I don't think it's a Spider-Man trilogy.
I mean, Spider-Man doesn't really do much in this movie. It's all fueled by, which granted, like, Peter is Spider-Man, yes, 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 but, like, a lot of, most of the things that happen in this movie, especially the dangerous stuff and the loved ones in danger and all of the hostages, most of the time it's fueled by things that Peter did, not Spider-Man. It's just the byproduct of the fact that Peter is Spider-Man. So like when Otto kidnaps Mary Jane, he doesn't kidnap Mary Jane because she's important to Spider-Man. He kidnaps her because she's important to Peter Parker, and Peter Parker takes pictures of Spider-Man. So it's kind of interesting, whereas like Peter was afraid of, you know, in the first two movies, we're dealing with the whole, I don't want people to be in, I don't want anybody to know who I am because that'll put my loved ones in danger when like, you can make that argument in the first movie because Norman was after Spider-Man, but then he realized Peter Parker was Spider-Man, right? So you can have that logic. In the second movie, that logic doesn't work anymore.
Even in the second movie, he gives up being Spider-Man for a good chunk of it. Like, these are really heavy Peter Parker focused movies. And the problem is, at the end of the day, Peter Parker also isn't that interesting in these movies. He's this mild-mannered, very nerdy guy who somehow keeps getting bullied no matter where he goes. And at some point, it's just like, I think each movie adds a little bit more to his dynamic. And I liked how in the third movie, at least, he's like, you know what, you just need to get back up on your horse and keep going. Because, you know what, that's actually interesting. And Mary Jane could probably actually do with listening to him. But it's, again, the problem was, is that they just don't talk to each other. And it's like, yeah, I'm providing solutions when all she wanted was comfort.
Because, again, Peter doesn't know how to be in a relationship or how to talk to girls.
And I just, like, I wish they did something more for Peter's character, because these are such Peter movies. Everything relies on him being interesting. And by the third movie, it's just, I got sick of the same thing over and over again. And I will give Black Suit Spider-Man this. At least he's changed his personality enough to make it a little bit more interesting. But I wish they played more into the rage and the anger rather than the weird misogyny thing and turning him into Black Suit Spider-Man.
So there's a note here that made me gasp a little bit while Caitlin was talking, and that is because apparently there was a latex black suit that was made for Tobey Maguire, but it had to be replaced. Or I'm sorry, a latex suit was made because the original suit they had was apparently too BDSM-esque and had to be replaced. I kind of want to see what that looked like, not gonna lie. Just curious. But in an interview, I think with Collider, I could be wrong, in 2015, part of the problem that apparently Raimi explained in a podcast for The Nerdist, that the problem with the movie was that he said, and I quote, "It's a movie that just didn't work very well. I tried to make it work, but I didn't really believe in all the characters. So that couldn't be hidden from the people who love Spider-Man. If the director doesn't love something, it's wrong of them to make it when so many other people love it. I think raising the stakes after Spider-Man 2 was the thinking going into it. And I think that's what doomed us. I should have just stuck with the characters and the relationships and progressed them to the next step and not try to top the bar." What do you think of that?
And I think that is the perfect kind of ending. Like, I cannot say it better than that. Like, that is kind of this trilogy in a nutshell.
Well, on that note, I guess, Caitlin, it's a little bit of a depressing note, but then so was the last episode when we talked about Spider-Man 3 and having to review it. So,
luckily, next time we'll be reviewing my favorite Spider-Man movie, Amazing Spider-Man 1, actually.
I think it's a lot of people's favorite Spider-Man movie.
There's a reason for that, folks. Gushing through that movie. I've seen it like 20 times.
So on that note, Caitlin, are you on social media yet?
Well, you know I am on Tumblr as Flying Night Witch, which is where you can find me. I refuse to be on X now because I hope it just crushes and dies.
How about Blue Sky? We can get you on Blue Sky.
Yeah, okay. We'll
you
try
heard
there.
It here, folks. Caitlin has agreed to be on Blue Sky. We're going to get her on there.
All right. When you see that happening, I will let everyone know. Yeah, so you can find me on Tumblr, mostly. And that's kind of where I live.
And you can find me on Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram, at Geeky Kaplan. That is after Billy Kaplan, the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe. Fight me. And you can find the podcast, of course. You can find me talking about it on Twitter, but you can also find us on Spotify or txhthockey.com, where it is lovingly edited and posted out by our amazing producer, Michael Lindenbaum. So catch us next time. And get excited as we swing our way into a good Spider-Man movie with amazing Spider-Man.